You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novi Williams, and this is the Sin City Super Showdown Sports Business Podcast, The Sportacast.
Nobody loves an alliteration like Scott Soschnick. But I do like good alliterations. That was not good.
All right. I thought for a second you were going to compliment the intro. For a second I had I'd managed to win approval.
No. It was, I mean, it's okay, but I don't know. Yeah, I need punchier. I was too simple for me. Too simple.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But it is the week, and I got to say, this week between the championship games and the Super Bowl week, It seems short. I don't know. Maybe I was busy. You know, focus group had a tournament. Maybe it was a little shorter. I don't know. But it didn't seem to drag on for me. I feel like, oh, it's Super Bowl week. Here we are. Like I'm ready for this.
I agree with that. I think, like a lot of football fans, I was expecting just a constant barrage of fluffy Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce stories, among other things. And it actually didn't seem to work out that way. I've been pleasantly surprised with how the news cycle has moved in the past week. And I say that knowing we have six more days to come, and I'm sure there will be more moving forward.
Well, one of the things we always used to say at our old outlet, one of the things we needed to do before going to the Super Bowl location was to call the police department spokespeople in that particular municipality and introduce ourselves and say, hey, do you mind if at the end of each night we give you a ring and we check in and see if anything happened with some names that we might be interested in. And already, it was not in Las Vegas, but we have Pat Mahomes, of course, quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, the dad, yep, former Major League pitcher, arrested for alleged DUI. So I'm sure that's not exactly how Pat Mahomes wanted to go into his Super Bowl week, with questions about, hey, what's up with your dad?
No question. Yeah, I've been really fascinated to see how, and sorry for the sirens there, how the NFL
they're coming for Pat.
They're coming.
Sorry. Too easy. Sorry.
How the NFL is dealing with Vegas, right? There's parties, there's gambling in every city that you have the Super Bowl, but none to the scale of Las Vegas in terms of where the teams are staying.
Yeah,
nowhere
far
near
away.
The strip.
Far away.
No surprise. A lot of communication, from what I understand, between the league, the teams, and players and personnel about gambling, reinforcing the league's rules about betting on sports, but also gambling, period.
That one seems silly to me. Why can't I play roulette? Well, I can't play roulette if it's just silly.
There's a lot of rules that make no sense, yeah. Right? The fact that as a NFL player, you can't sit at your stall in the practice facility and bet on the NBA also feels like it is a silly, silly restriction to a degree. But we've talked a lot about the show. There's been so much written about how Vegas has turned from being essentially taboo to professional leagues to the one of the hottest cities for professional leagues in about a decade. Sports betting obviously playing a big role there, but the league is obviously very sensitive to the idea that, despite the fact that it is making a lot of money from sports betting, there is still some reputational risk associated with the convenience of the marriage.
Evan, were you aware that not in the too distant past, the National Football League barred Tony Romo from even attending a fantasy event in Las Vegas. I mean, were you aware of that? Can you? But that actually happened.
I do. I was aware of that. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do remember it. Yeah. I mean, the about face is wild, right? And I don't want to give too much. I don't want to emphasize it too much because I think it often actually gets overblown in terms of the way that the opposition these leagues had relative to the partnerships and cozy relationship they have right now. But nothing puts a finer point on that than having a Super Bowl in Las Vegas a couple of years after moving a team to Las Vegas. MLS tried and failed to put a team there. The Oakland Athletics are trying to move a team there. The NBA, if you were a betting man, pun not intended, I think you would certainly expect Vegas to be on a very short list of NBA expansion.
That brings us to Theo and Fenway Sports Group. No, I'm sorry. I know it doesn't. I mean, it would have been a great transition, but we're not there yet. But anyway, that's a little tease, a little foreshadow.
There's certainly a big Vegas story looming over the Super Bowl. What else are you kind of paying attention to? One of the things I've been thinking about a lot, and I know there's a story, Sportico stories coming later this week about this as well. The roster construction between these two teams, I think, is actually quite fascinating from a business standpoint. On one end, in Kansas City, you have the one of, if not maybe even the highest paid player in the league this year in Patrick Mahomes, quarterback star, making a very large amount of money, one of the highest paid players on the team, if not the league itself. And then on the other end, you have Brock Purdy, a guy who's on his first NFL contract, being paid a very small amount, right? The way in which your roster construction differs when you have a star quarterback like Patrick Mahomes or a guy on his rookie deal like Brock Purdy drastically changes the way that in a hard salary cap you can think about constructing the rest of your roster. That's certainly one of them that jumps out to me as an interesting juxtaposition between two teams, which we don't often see in other sports, right? In the NBA, for example, if LeBron and the Lakers were to meet, just pick a star team in the East, let's say the 76ers, they've been in the news recently, you get a sense that like there's star players on both these teams. They're getting huge max contracts. They're paid roughly the same. Football, sometimes it just works out differently in terms of who the good teams are. And there's a relationship between those two things also, that if you're not spending a ton of money on a few highly paid players, if you can get some talent at big positions for less money, you obviously have more money to pass around to other positions as well. So that's one thing that's on my radar.
Boy, that was long for one thing. I would have said Celtics or Bucks, but now are the Knicks for real? I mean, can we go into let's go on the fan for a moment? Knicks won a whole bunch of games in a row before they lost to LeBron.
You're the NBA guy, Scott. I would defer to you.
Everybody's for real.
Because my gut reaction is, of course, the Knicks are not for real. Yeah.
No. They play hard. I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes on that one. Well, I am going out to Vegas for.
You are?
Yeah, I didn't tabulate totally. So we're recording on Monday. I'm leaving tomorrow. So when you're listening to the show, I'll say I'm leaving today. I'm very interested to spend some time with Lloyd Howell, the new or relatively new executive director of the NFL Players Association. Comes from a Booz Hamilton background, and he and I had some interesting chats. I'm really interested to see in sort of where the players go from here. There is relative labor peace, right? They had a big bargaining chip in the 17th game, and I guess they extracted what they wanted, maybe not. Roger still has plenty of power in terms of the Lord of the Discipline. But I'm really curious as to now, with labor peace, what do you do? I'm interested in the associations in general. Tomika Tremaglio let go at the NBPA. We hear plenty of players as sort of your tech entrepreneur and investor these days. I'm just really curious to see what the agenda is for the NFLPA. What do they hope to accomplish? Whether it's in tandem with the NFL or on their own, and which players are going to lead the way? I'm just dying to hear what they have to say.
From a business perspective, I think of the major league unions as kind of juggling with two big questions. One, obviously, being the negotiation and labor accords with their leagues. Mm-hmm. What do they look like? What are they prioritizing? What can they value? Yeah. And then secondly, and the NFLPA has been on the forefront of this recently, is outside of that relationship, how do we better monetize all the rights that we have among our players that are not contingent on the labor
accord? Group license.
And the group licensing. And the NFLPA and Major League Baseball PA came together to form One Team Partners a few years ago. They're still kind of working their way through that. I don't think, and I could be wrong, but to my knowledge, I don't think any of the major unions has really fully figured that out yet, that piece of the celebrity among star athletes in America is so incredibly strong. And yes, some of that is tied directly to the teams that he or she plays for and plays on and the IP of those leagues. But there are players that are way more popular and bigger celebrities than the teams that they play on. And monetizing that is a unique challenge because of communication, and players are doing their own thing. It's not just the union thing. They're doing their own thing. But in my opinion, from where I sit, no major league union has really, really figured out the best way to get buy-in from all of the stars and to collectively monetize their rights in a way that feels commensurate with the stardom that they have.
Well, I to echo what you just said, I think we can do it through nomenclature. I mean, you know what the licensing arm of the NBPA is known as? You know, do you know the title of the licensing arm?
Think 450, something like that.
Yeah, you
right?
know what that stands yeah. for.
There's that's the number of players.
Number of players in the league. Think. Yeah. As a group, think for the 450 yeah, players yeah. in the NBA. But, you know, LeBron James would have a little different nomenclature. Think me.
think one.
Yeah, think one. So that's the way it is. But at least I like, of course, you got your obvious, your video games and the like, right? But then how do you capitalize on sort of the collective? I think it's easier in the NBA than it is in the NFL because realistically, how many mega stars are there in the NFL? You've got, you know, your handful of quarterbacks, maybe a couple skilled position players, but by and large, your linemen, you know, your linebackers, your defensive backs, they're nameless, faceless, just, you know, okay, well, who's my left guard? Whatever, you know, yeah. hard to rope that person into some marketing, a conversation, by the way, for Lloyd Howell. Like what can you do as a group? What's your approach? Where do you stand on sort of this pie in sky thinking of equity, of players holding equity in franchises or holding equity in the league. We're hearing more and more about that as the NFL mulls the addition of private equity investors in teams. Where does that leave the players? We have a blueprint, right, from the NBA and their labor talks, and they're trying to form a way whereas the union, the players via the union can invest in teams, and we'll see what that looks like when they cross the finish line. But I expect those same sorts of conversations to happen in the NFL, only difference being sort of the valuation of the teams. You know, the NFL is the king of the hill. So these are the kind of things I want to talk to Lloyd about, and I'm really excited to see what he has to say.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, let me tease. We do have a guest op-ed coming from Lloyd later this week. a little business item. Everybody would have yelled at me. You didn't even promote the op-ed. Sorry. Yep. Lloyd Howell op-ed. I think it drops Thursday.
Great. Yeah, people should keep an eye out for that. Obviously, another thing that I would think about as when we talk about unions, particularly for the NFLPA, the one of the things that the PA. One of the big changes that's happened over the past decade with the PA is rookie NFL players are getting paid a lot less. It's less of a priority during labor talks.
They're not members of the union yet.
Obviously, there's no about to be players in the union to advocate for those about to be players. But just it's a stat that I think would blow a lot of people's minds. But when Sam Bradford was picked as the number one pick way back when, he got a $78 million contract. And when Bryce Young was the number one pick last year, 2023, he got a $37 million contract. Mm-hmm. That just shows you how big the rookie pay scale has changed. The dynamic for rookie and rookie football players is going to change with NIL, right? Mm-hmm. More and more, the best college football players are going to be making significantly more while in college than they ever were. And that is, I think, going to change the dynamic between how you feel if you are a star college football player about the salary offering that you're getting in the NFL. And I do think that, you know, Caleb Williams is a vehicle to tell that story. But there's a really interesting dynamic shift, I think, where for a long time, for a lot of star college football players, any kind of contract from the NFL was amazing and life-changing and a fundamental difference from college. And we're going to get to a point now where athletes are making $10-plus million in college on their way to the NFL, and suddenly that shrinking rookie deal maybe doesn't look quite as alluring as it did in the past. So another thing to think about and maybe discuss with Lloyd. I'm fascinated to see how that dynamic changes.
Well, things to think about, what we've already talked about. You know, Caleb did bring up the concept of, I would like equity. In the team that drafts me. Now, we know that will not happen now.
Good luck, young man.
Yeah but it's just the fact that the young man is thinking that way. Clearly, his eyes have been opened. His ears have been opened to what's going on in the sports business ecosystem. And if I sat down with him and said, hey, could we have a longer discussion? I don't know whether or not he would know what's going on in other leagues in terms of why they're bringing in private equity, what governors are on there, what are the guardrails, where it stands in the NFL and sort of the special owner committee. I don't know, but I do love the fact that he just brought it up. Whether somebody told him to, whether it was a talking point, I don't care. Other players are watching. The world is watching, and the commissioners and the owners are listening to what this about to be number one pick has to say. And it's a harbinger of things to come. Like, it's just be known that there's an education going on with athletes, younger athletes, that these are the questions that owners maybe 5, 10, 20 years ago could have easily pushed aside. Oh, no, that's silly. I know the response, by the way. It's the same thing you hear during labor. I take all the risk, right? And by the way, I will tell you, Evan, and I've said this before, that I was unsympathetic to that. In a world where we knew what the appreciation was. It's like owning an NFL was kind of like a guarantee, like having a CD. You're going to go X percent, whatever. You know, everything was great. Until COVID hit and, you know, revenue was zero. That's, you know, okay, wait, I see this now. Yeah. I can see there is an element of risk here, not to the franchise appreciation, but sort of to your operating, you know, your cash flow, your free cash flow of that year. So it was easy to get away with, no, you know, it's my capital. I own the team. You don't have anything at risk. To, all right, well, is there a broader discussion to have? Can we grow the pie faster? Can I make more money as partners? That's at least, I think, where we're headed, at least a discussion.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think that part, that last point you made, gets lost in the conversation sometimes, right? There is a reason that startups grant equity to a lot of its most important employees, right?
Like the NFL.
One of those reasons is that when there's a mutual working towards a goal, that sometimes there's more motivation, there's more synergy, et cetera. NFL obviously was not built anywhere near that kind of structure. But yes, I think there is that argument that cutting players in the NBA may be getting the closest to this, but cutting players in some way incentivizes everybody to work together in a way that maybe they weren't before, I think actually has a lot of merit and has a lot of legs. But you're right. I think it's going to take a while, I think, to get to that point.
My favorite Andy Brandt quote has nothing to do with kickers and lawyers. I mean, that's just been forever, but I do love the Andy Brandt socialize the cost, privatize the profit.
100%.
And to keep it. How do we keep it? Yep. You pay, I keep. That I do love. All right, let's move on. You mentioned Fenway. I mentioned Theo Epstein. Back in an ownership capacity with Fenway Sports Group. Of course, Theo, the former general manager of the Boston Red Sox when they won the World Series. Also of the Chicago Cubs when they won the World Series. And if you win the World Series as the general manager of both those franchises, you get a lot of good things.
You're set for life.
Yeah, you're doing pretty well. And this is one of them now. Theo will relinquish his role as a sort of advisor to MLB because now he's taking an ownership stake in the parent company of the Red Sox, of Liverpool, and a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah, I mean, we can tease out what some of those other things are, because even some sports fans, I think, don't know that Fenway owns Fenway Park, obviously, owns the Red Sox, owns Liverpool, as you mentioned, the Pittsburgh Penguins,
yep,
of the NHL, Roush Fenway Racing, NASCAR team, and we teased it, seemed to be interested in an NBA team. They just led the investment, the strategic sports group's investment into the PGA Tour's commercial rights. They own a franchise, TGL, in Tiger and Rory's new golf league. They are one of these companies that we talk about a lot that is these platform parent companies that own a lot of sports with a lot of synergies in a lot of places. Nesson, obviously, they have the media piece as well. This, I imagine, for Theo is a very fun new challenge, right? It's good economically. He's becoming an investor and part owner in Fenway.
He was already, by the way, though, he was already an operating partner in Arctos. So he's already embedded in the private equity world in the firm that's buying LP stakes in a whole bunch of franchises.
Was that the triangulation?
This is our triangulation portion of the show. Thank you.
Ding ding ding.
Oh, wait a minute! Ding ding ding! Our triangulation. We should have a triangle, and you know, ding 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 ding. We should, like, you were calling the folks in for lunch.
We should 100% do that. I will talk to Aaron.
It's up to you to get that. It's up to you. Who wants to sponsor the triangulation portion of the show? Who makes sense? Any idea?
Sitco? Do they have the, speaking of Fenway, is there a triangle?
Well, I was going to say, if you didn't bring the Fenway in there, I was going to be like, ooh, all right.
Yeah, Sitco, yeah, the Sitco, triangle.
Yeah. I like that. All right. We'll have to figure
out. We have incepted our own brains here.
I like it. Is there a pyramid? Degree. Anybody else have a pyramid? I don't know, but yes.
It's got to
anyway.
Be Sitco. That's it.
All right. Calling all sponsors for the triangulation portion of the show. That's it. I will say your name, the company of your name. I don't know. Since it's triangle, I will say your company names 3 times.
Did you, your son, anybody you know, watch any of the NHL All-Star Game?
Okay, when you say any of the NHL All-Star Game, as you know, Focus Group of One and I were down in Fort Lauderdale, and Mom, down in Fort Lauderdale for a tournament. So if it counts that in between games, we went to eat at some restaurant, and on one of the smaller TVs in the establishment, the NHL All-Star Game was on while the Miami Heat were playing. So clearly that would have been, you know, the Focus television. We did ask for change, eventually got it. So they were peaking, but it wasn't, amazingly, it wasn't sort of all out pay attention to it. I will say what by osmosis made its way to my brain is one thing, that Connor McDavid won $1 million.
Yeah,
that's I hate it because I was trying to watch a little Matty Barzal, see what he did. But the only thing that made it through, well, two things. One, McDavid won and won $1 million. I have no idea anything after that. And two, it seemed like everybody really liked it in Toronto.
Those
are the two things that I can take away.
The All-Star Games have become, existential crisis is maybe a bit of an exaggeration, but a challenge for every league to figure out what format works, what's going to keep people engaged. The idea a long time ago was that the All-Star Game was a chance to see player personalities. Social media changed that forever. There's not... The appeal of just seeing guys in a more casual setting is not enough anymore. So trying to figure out the different formats, the NHL, I think, has done a very good job recently of playing around with some different things. I know you were there in Florida last year, Scott, and they very much embraced the kind of beach theme of doing the All-Star game.
Yeah, the only problem was when I bought tickets and me and a bunch of the kids went to the game, half of it was shown on the Jumbotron as recorded earlier in the day at the beach. Yeah, so we're just sitting there in the arena going, why am I here?
That's bad. That's bad. Yeah, the NHL All-Star Game, to come full circle a little bit, was in Vegas a couple years ago. They did a very cool poker-style game with some of the All-Stars there. This year, they did the Skills Challenge, but a little bit differently. They essentially made it like a decathlon. It was everybody competed in all the events, and slowly they started kicking people out. I think the format, from what I've read from NHL fans I know, was what people really liked. I caught a very short, very small amount of it. My partner happens to quasi like the Oilers, so she was excited
The Oilers.
What a time.
Right,
So we watched Connor McDavid do the fastest skater, but the skater obstacle course thing. Mm-hmm. And we watched a few of them, and she was like, is it me or am I crazy that he's like visibly better at this than everybody else?
It is not you.
And I was like, no, this is the 12 best players in the world. And yes, he is visibly better than everybody else. And then we watched Nikita Kucherov go. Scott, and I don't know if you've read about him, but he was playing the role of the heel, the anti-heel. I don't even know what was going on, but he was sleepwalking through the thing to loud boos from everybody in the Toronto crowd, which added to the drama, I think, in some ways, right? There was a villain to watch, and he got kicked out. I think he finished last among everybody because, again, he was barely trying. But I applaud the NHL for trying to find and iterating year over year, which I think is what it requires now. I think the answer is that to keep this thing fresh, you need a new format every year. Try something new, do something different. And I'm sure we'll see other leagues play around with that as well. But on the whole, I think it was probably a successful an all-star game with Connor McDavid featured heavily in Toronto. Seems like it is it's a layup of a business plan, but it does seem like it went quite well.
All right. Well, I have two comments where my mind was meandering as you were talking. One, because you mentioned we were down there, half our games for the tournament were played at the Ice Den, which is the practice ring for the Panthers. Lovely two-sheet facility. Little cold for my liking. I did not bring a jacket. I thought a sweatshirt would be enough for the Ice Den, even though the word ice is in there. I was wrong. It was cold in there. But then the other rink, and I was excited to play here because, again, you shut your eyes. It's called the Rink at the Beach, right? Okay. And like that's got to be great, right?
Oh, I'm picturing big glass windows, yeah, with ocean on the outside.
Let me tell you, the Warrior facility in Boston, where the Bruins practice, has a giant glass wall overlooking the highway. Just, you know, beautiful facility. Rink at the Beach. Oh my God, what a dump! What a total dump. Locker rooms the size of postage stamps. So the surface itself was kind of small. Our boys are too big, too fast to be playing on these little rinks. Just collisions all over the place. But anyway,
the owner of the rink at the beach was going to sponsor our triangulation thing.
No, he was not. He's not.
And now he's ripping up the tender offer.
He won't even put up clean plexiglass. There's no way he's sponsoring anything.
Ripping up that offer.
And then when you brought up Taylor Swift, you said the word anti-hero about Nikita Kucherov. That's my segue to Taylor Swift, because we can't really have a show Super Bowl week without Taylor Swift. Lyrics, of course, I look into the sun, but never in the mirror. It must be exhausting, always rooting for the anti-hero, which I love. So that brought me to there.
Which brings
me to an interesting tweet. It's on the backside of my paper. I had to write this one down. Linking it all, the Grammy Awards. And unfortunately, I told you this outside before we started the show. But let's give the listeners a moment to maybe answer. And you can talk over it. But what was the top Grammy Awards market? What do you think was number one in terms of number of people tuning in to watch the Grammys? And what were your guesses?
This is to clarify. It's as a percentage of the thing, right? Not just raw numbers.
Correct.
Yeah. So my original guess was Atlanta.
Yeah, you said Atlanta, then you said Nashville,
And then I said Nashville. Obviously, two places, like two hubs of music in the American Southeast.
Right. And this is how, again, if you didn't have the second piece of information, and I tell you it's Kansas City with a 13.6 rating, you could say, okay, well, maybe there's an anomaly or maybe Casey always loves music. How about this? Up 86% over last year. So don't tell me Casey doesn't love It's Tay, right?
Yeah, one of the interesting things about that stat is that when I think about the Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift relationship, it feels like a lot of the benefits flow towards the Travis and the NFL side, mm-hmm. right? We've talked a lot about the hordes of people that were trying to get to NFL games that she was going to be at or wouldn't normally be watching NFL games that were tuning in because she was there. This is an example of the opposite, right? This is, by virtue of that stat, seems like it is potentially Kansas City Chiefs fans, yep. or Travis Kelce fans that wouldn't normally but are now tuning in to see Taylor in some way. That's really interesting to me because I have always thought about the dynamic as almost one directional given where the NFL is with its own fans and where Taylor is with hers.
They're the beneficiaries.
This is an argument for it going in both directions.
Taylor needs this. That's what this says. Taylor needs these fans. Not really. All right, let's close it out with this because I found it interesting also. So you saw Sphere announced had its earnings.
Yep.
All right, so $314 million in revenue. Now, if you asked me where's the bulk of the revenue coming from, I would have said U2 with and then a close number two being sort of your advertising that includes your exoskeleton that gets so much attention, right? Nope, that's not it. You know what the number one revenue generator is?
I know because you told me.
Yeah, so go ahead and share it.
It's what it's called Postcards of the Earth.
Yeah, something like that. The Sphere Experience and then whatever it is you just said.
I think it's the kind of standing show, the one that they're showing most often.
You could just show up and say, I want to see this today, right?
Yeah, so I think just by virtue of volume, the amount of shows that they're doing and whatever the gate is for each individual one seems to be, that's why it's the dominant one versus, as you said, the quick 1 week where someone like U2 comes in or the Grateful Dead comes in and does bonkers numbers, but for a short amount of time. Every photo I see of the Sphere, and we're seeing a lot of them because the Super Bowl's there.
A lot of football helmets on the Sphere.
Yeah. Every single one looks photoshopped.
Yeah.
It's like a different angle, and the thing just looks so huge and so garish, and the colors are so bright.
Bright, everything garish, and huge. Las Vegas.
Looks, yeah, there you go. Looks photoshopped. But yeah, it's for folks who don't know, developed by Madison Square Garden, the same parent, overarching parent company of the Rangers and the Knicks, and
your NBA Finals bound New York Knicks,
the Beacon, and exactly the real New York Knicks. A model that it seems like they may be trying to replicate other places. I've heard London as well.
London said no.
No, London said no. Yeah. I have not heard London. I'm wrong.
Yeah, London turned them down.
Yeah, a very expensive live venue that is very cool from anyone I've heard who's been there. But
Dead and Company coming next, right?
Back. Dead and Company coming next. Whatever
a marriage
monetization comes back. Hallucinatory
we'll see. Heaven, Jesus.
But there's not much stuff like this that makes me curious, Scott. I'd love to see a show there. Just curious about, personally curious about everything I've heard about how amazing the U2 shows were, and how fundamentally different it is
from
seeing anything
else. Yeah, I heard two things. I agree. I've heard how amazingly different and transformative the U2 show was as well as in that venue. But I also had a subset of people telling me, it's fine, you can go and be blown away and say it's great, or you can wait for somebody to really, really design a show specifically for that venue. And they were like, you know, they were spitballing. These people that I was talking to were spitballing. He said, no, somebody like Lady Gaga, a theatrical, performative,
Bruce.
Something or other. Yeah, I don't see Bruce exactly. That's not what I see. But anyway, you know, Dead and Company next, so that'll be interesting as well. But that's not for me. Playing at the Beacon Theater when I went on my first date with my now wife was Phil Lesh. And there were a whole bunch of people outside, and I remember I was just walking by. I kept saying to her, I go, who the hell is Phil Lesh?
Who is this guy?
I did not know. Who be it this Phil Lesh? I did not know. So that has stuck with us all these years. Every time one of us is curious about something, we say, who the hell is Phil Lesh?
Amazing. Well, Scott, have a great time in Las Vegas. We will catch in with you either later this week or next week. Get all of the updates. In the meantime, you can follow Scott's adventures in Vegas at his Twitter account, @Soshnik. I am Eben Novi Williams on Twitter, @Novi_Williams. The show is produced by Aaron Greenewald. Thank you very much to Aaron. Sportico's digital media editor, Cora Vellman. Would like you to know that you can follow the show at Sportacast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.